UC Soros is a brick wall in goal. Back-to-back shutout wins for the Nashville Predators against the Dallas Stars. And what a way to close out the weekend for the Predators. A big win in Dallas. Welcome into Morning Drive. This is Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrow from The Athletic. Munson behind the glass. Fellas, how's it going, Joe?
It's good. What an eventful weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of Nashville and Nashville area teams had good weekends. Some didn't, but the Preds, man, all of a sudden they can't be scored on.
Yeah, they're just an impenetrable force defensively now. Just a really good weekend for them, and keeping pace in the Western Conference. Now, they did have a lot of other teams around them in the standings win, which that's what you got to do. You got to make sure you keep pace while other teams are winning. Minnesota, Kevin Fiala, another overtime winner for him last night. He continues to just play really, really well. But just a big weekend for the Predators, big game for the Predators. And, you know, people were starting to be concerned, as we've been several times this year, heading into that Dallas game this last Thursday night at Bridgestone. They had gotten shelled by Edmonton. They lost on the road in Minnesota. And you come back, you get a big win where I thought they played pretty well Thursday night from start to finish. And then the response was, okay, you know Dallas is going to try to throw the kitchen sink at you on Saturday. And I thought the Predators handled it really, really well in that game Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, in Dallas, it's doom and gloom.
It's
five in a row, and there's no offense, and what's wrong with this team? Hey, you know what? It's just like when the Preds lost to the Hurricanes. Sometimes it's like, you know, give credit to that team playing really well. You play what's in front of you, and they were solid and sound. I also like how they still taking shots at Corey Perry whenever they get a chance.
Yeah.
I feel like Jared Tinordi has really establish himself as a guy who's going to, you know, go out and back up his teammates. And obviously, we talk all the time about offense and getting more from certain people, and that's still not happening. But when a goaltender and a defense, when you play like this and win, you don't think about that stuff as much.
No. I do want to say this. So I didn't watch the game live on Saturday. I went back and watched it later that night. I was out Saturday in East Nashville. Just kind of walking around, and we were passing out hot dogs and food and water and all these different things to people who had their homes destroyed, and there were thousands upon thousands of volunteers out there. It was so cool to just see everybody's spirit around here. I was in the East Nashville area, like I said, but just we tried to go over to Donaldson at one point. They had too many volunteers over there, so we went back to East Nashville. It was just such a cool sight to see on Saturday, and you know, I had the Preds game on the radio, kind of listening to it as we were walking around, and went back and watched it later. But just a really cool weekend in our community. Just stories like that everywhere in terms of volunteers recovering from this tornado, and man, it was really cool to see just people come together in person on Saturday, because we had talked about it all week, but just being there on Saturday and seeing like actual people, you know, hugging strangers in person, and seeing people like these neighbors. There was they set up a corner where they were just grilling burgers and cooking food for people that in the neighborhood. It was just so cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, the volunteerism has been fantastic around here. Like to your point, there are, you know, like the Hands on Nashville site has been, you know, like overloaded, and some things are full on stuff, and some people are showing up and, like you said, turned away. I went to North Nashville Friday, so the Titans showed up. You got Mike Vrabel driving the pickup truck with the big chaw, you know, in his mouth, and John Robinson and Kenneth Adams on the back. But you walk around that neighborhood in North Nashville, those neighborhoods, and you know, a lot of devastation, but a lot of people out there, people doing the same thing, you know, passing out pizzas, passing out hot dogs, moving stuff. So, you know, still a long way to go, and power still out. People, you know, I think the weather warming up is big. The things that were at a premium, you know, were blankets and hand warmers and stuff like that, you know. And you know, still a long way to go. I would say this about this. Like you said, Robbie, like right now, everyone wants to volunteer, and everyone's getting out there. It's overload. Like, be there in a month, too. Be there in 2 months, too, because
it's going to take a while.
It's not going to be. Yeah, exactly. You know, it'll die down a little bit, and, you know, life's going to go back to normal, and that's fine. But, you know, keep that in mind, too. I know, you know, I've talked to my family, like, you know, right now, like, lots of people are out there, but, you know, we're going to, a few weeks down the road, we got to continue to look back, say, what's needed where. And that that website, HON.org, is a great resource in terms of kind of having a feel for what is needed where.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's funny, we were sitting there in East Nashville, and we were kind of helping people go through stuff, and a guy who actually follows me on Twitter recognized me out there and listens to the show, and it was, like, I guess it was around 2:30, 2:45, and the Preds game was already started. He'd be taking stuff out, and you know, a bunch of brush piles and tree limbs, all these different things. And every time he'd get up to the top of the street, he'd yell at me and go, "Robbie, what's the score of the Preds game?" it's just funny that you know, people were still trying to keep tabs with their favorite sports teams as much as they can. I know, Joe, you had a big weekend in the great city of Evansville as well.
That's right. Went to Evansville, and, man, it just doesn't disappoint. Belmont Murray State does not disappoint, and it didn't again. And just a tremendous game. And I really, you know, like the setup up there. I think it works well for the OVC tournament. Packed house, almost all Murray State fans. I mean, it was, Sam, you were in there, but what, 90-10? Was it 90-10 Murray? Yeah. Okay. He's nodding at me. That's about right.
Yeah.
So it was a
hostile environment.
Yeah. So it was a road game. Just an incredible win for Belmont. You got the backdoor play, Liberty, to Tyler Scanlon with 3.8 seconds left to win it. Wrote a whole bunch of words about all that at theathletic.com/Nashville. But just a great game. And Casey Alexander comes in from Lipscomb, takes over for Rick Byrd. And immediately, you know, really, it's their first OVC championship in 5 years.
Yeah.
They've had a rough go in Evansville, and they lost the last two against Murray when they played them the last 2 years in a row. John Morant last year. You know, Nick Mazinski couldn't play last year. Huge loss, and they lost that game. They got an at-large bid, but going and winning it and knowing you're in, now they get to sit there for for a week. And I tell you what, whoever the 3 or 4 seed out there that's going to play Belmont, mm-hmm. It's a really good team. And Nick Mazinski in particular, 6'11", post score. Look, he is going to be a problem for whoever they face.
No question about it. Casey Alexander is going to join us at 8:30. Also have Jimmy Dykes from the SEC Network scheduled to join us at 8 o'clock, along with our usual guest of Corey Curtis at 7 o'clock, and then Darren McFarlane from Darren Donick and Chase at 9 o'clock. So, Joe, Saturday night I got home and kind of unwinded, went back and watched the Preds game. I thought defensively, I know the shots on goal, you look at them, you're like, okay, I mean, they were under siege a lot, but I thought defensively they played pretty well. UC Saros was good when he had to be, but it was another one of those games where you didn't feel like the Stars were just in total control at any point. I thought the Predators did a really good job of really just limiting how effective Dallas was offensively, and UC Saros, he continues to just take this ball and run with it. Back-to-back shutouts for him. His numbers in his last 10 starts are just ridiculous, off the wall. I mean, you're talking about a .948 save percentage or somewhere in that area. So he's playing really, really well as of late. And, look, I get it right now. You know, you think back to the last couple games, 2 goals scored Thursday night, 1 goal scored Saturday. They're not scoring a ton right now. But when you get goaltending and defense that's playing as well as they are right now, sometimes that's all it takes.
Right. So he started 14 of the past 20.
Yeah.
Of their past 20 games. He's 10-4, 2-1-5, a .936 save percentage, and then, you know, 3 shutouts, 2 in a row. So, hey, when it comes down to it, what would you, of all the things that you'd want to have in this sport, a hot goaltender, you got to be number one, right?
It's number one.
So, I mean, that bodes well. Now, imagine if they can take that, because that's the thing. Sometimes the shot totals, and first of all, when a team's trailing for the duration of the game, that's going to happen. We've talked about how a lot of times it's going to happen against John Hines teams anyways, the way that he wants to play. So I think that there's a lot to build on in terms of this is how they need to play, and then now can you sprinkle in a little more offense? Big. Now that was the start of course, a big road trip for this team. So, you know, they're about basically about the same home and road now through, what are they, 17, 14, and 4 at home. They're 17, 12, and 4 on the road.
Right.
Virtually identical. So, you know, they've played well, really. That's a good road record. You hope to have a better home record than they do. But, you know, huge swing coming up. And, I mean, look, they don't have a back-to-back. Man, they don't. I didn't realize this. I'm surprised as I look at this grid. They do not have a back-to-back the rest of this month. So we could see a whole bunch of UC Soros moving forward here.
And they got three Eastern Conference teams this week. So this is one of those weeks where if you go into overtime, okay. I mean, you're not giving another team in the Western Conference any points. This is one of those weeks where you just got to make sure you're getting points in any way that you can. Obviously, you'd like to win all those games, but if for some reason you've got to lose this week, just try to get it to overtime because you're not worried at all about a three-point game this week. And that's the luxury you have of playing against some of these Eastern Conference teams this late in the season, which they're going to have a few of those coming up. I mean, you got Montreal, Toronto, Columbus this week. Philadelphia is coming up. They still have another one with Montreal and Philadelphia as well. So you got to take advantage of those games and get points any way that you can.
And by the way, I can't read a grid because actually they have a back-to-back coming right up this weekend at Columbus.
Attaboy, Joe.
Yeah. So we'll see some Pecorino. The huge one, you know, really of four games this week at Minnesota, another crack at the Wild.
Yeah.
I mean, that is massive. There's a back-to-back the following weekend. Philly at home, you go to Chicago. The Blackhawks have been kind of hanging, and then you lose to the Red Wings, and it's almost like you're waving the white flag.
And then they lost last night, too. Not a good look for the Blackhawks.
And actually, at the end of the month, at Arizona, at Colorado, another weekend back-to-back. So three weekend back-to-back. So other than that, I was right about no
Attaboy.
Back-to-backs
that's
this
what,
week.
That's what we get you here for.
Hey, it's the first segment, man.
That's right. When we come back, Corey Perry got hit right in the face this past weekend on Saturday, and Predators fans loved it. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Ellis has some friends on the Nashville Predators. Jarrett Tinordy going after Corey Perry over the weekend. Tried to go after him on Thursday night at home, and Perry kind of backed into the boards, and the refs came in and kind of separated him a little bit. Went after him again on Saturday. And then, of course, Roman Josi with a cross-check right to the face of Corey Perry right around the net in front of UC Soros. Roman Josi was actually fined $5,000, which is the maximum allowable fine under the CBA for cross-checking Corey Perry right in the face, which I think most Predators fans will be like, you know what? It's probably worth it.
Well, and by the way, it was a reaction to Corey Perry
basically sticking him in the back.
Yeah. He slashed him in the leg. And then I think Corey Perry did an expert job of making sure the cross check hit him high and then crumpling immediately.
Oh, it looked like there was a sniper in the crowd.
I'm not saying it's fine. You cross. Bottom line is, if you're going to bring that and it hits where it hits, I'm fine with a fine.
Sure.
But that was some acting to me also.
Yes. And look, Roman Josi is not afraid to cross check. I mean, I think at one point this year he led the NHL in cross-checking penalties. So it's not necessarily something that he is – it's not new for Roman Josi, let me put it that way. Now, cross-checking somebody in the face, he hasn't done a whole lot of that. But like you said, Corey Perry, eventually, if you're the Predators, like, you just got to say, you know what? We've had enough of you, dude. Like, you already took one of our best players out for a month and a half. You're sitting here messing around the net, which is what Corey Perry does, and give him credit. He's played that way his entire career. For the most part, he has found a way to toe the line without going over the line for the majority of his career. Now, there have been some instances where that has not been the case, but that's just the way Corey Perry plays. But you got to know also, if you're Corey Perry, you play that way all the time. Things that happen Saturday sometimes are going to happen to you, and I think that's a price he's willing to pay. But certainly, I thought he did a pretty nice job of selling that after he got hit in the face. Not saying that I condone the cross check to the face, but I did think that it probably was not as bad as it appeared to look, or as Corey Perry made it look.
No, not at all. By the way, it's Tinner. Did you know it was Tinner?
Oh yeah,
Tinner.
Tinner.
Is there not something else you can do with
it? The hockey nickname is just fascinating to me.
Well, most of them are, if you can do anything with an E sound at the end, you'll do that.
Ellie.
Yeah.
I mean, Yossi already has an E, so his is a Yoss,
like,
I guess.
Like Subi? They called Subban Subi. Don't do that. Ellis called him that, for sure.
Oh, they did.
Subi? No. Yeah.
That wasn't good.
Subs.
Some of them are really bad.
Yeah, but Tenor, I guess, I don't know, Tenorti, I guess, what are you going to do? Really, you just call him Tenorti because you got the E on the end of that anyway.
Yeah.
But Tenor, yeah, man, I don't know. There's some.
Everyone's got to have a nickname, though.
I mean, like, what would your nickname be? Stanny? Just take the L out?
Stanner?
Stanner? I mean, what would you do with Munson's last name?
I don't know. What would your hockey nickname be, Munson?
You call him Muncy.
I think you probably would call him Muncy.
Right? I mean, I don't know.
But yeah, that's awful. Let's not do that.
But that's hockey
nicknames.
That's
what we're going
to
do
from
now on.
You have to take every last name in hockey and twist it.
And add an E to it.
I mean, mine's easy. You go Rexy, you're fine, right? But yeah,
Sexy
Muncy?
Rexy, something like that.
Sure.
That is interesting, you know, because there's some around the league where you're just like, how do you make a nickname out of that? Like
Corbinian Holzer. Holzy?
I guess Holzy. I don't know. Like, there's some where you have to think long and hard about it. To me, like, if you have to sit there and think about it, it's not much of a nickname.
Like,
right?
Do something with the first name.
Now, that would be something. Corbs?
Yeah, Corbs.
Yeah.
Call him Corbs. Now, there is a Corbs in town already.
But not in that locker room.
That's right.
Not. You know, they call, some of them call Yannick Weber Webs. And to me, like, being around the locker room, there's one Webs. Shea Weber.
That's what they call Shea Weber, Webs.
Yeah, so now they Roman Yossi, who's like best friends with Yannick Weber, calls him Webby. So that's a little different.
So here
you're just kind of differentiating nicknames. Like, that's a lot to keep up with if you're a player.
Well, all you got to do is call him Yanni.
There you go.
So just call the guy Yanni and get over with it, you know?
There you go.
Use the first name, some hockey guys.
Well, regardless of what name they call him, I do think that Jared Tenorti is making himself very popular among his teammates. He seems to be recently the guy that if you need to have somebody come in there and either fight or stand up for a teammate, he's become that guy. He did that in St. Louis, too, with Robert Bortuzzo, dropping the gloves with him. Look, I mean, fighting is really out of the game for the most part. Like, it's nowhere near as big of a deal as it used to be. But there is something to be said, I think, about having a guy that has some toughness to him, that has some grit to him, that at least you know if you're the other team, if I start pushing these guys around too much, you have to answer to a guy like Jared Tenorti. And the Predators, quite frankly, I mean, Austin Watson's tried to do that. It hasn't really gone that well for him. They haven't really had that guy. And I'm not saying that's going to be the difference in them winning and losing games, but I think it is important to have a guy like that.
Oh, it is. And look, again, we've talked about this. You know, they brought in Cody McLeod. It was kind of an obvious, like, someone's got to be on this roster who deters other teams from messing with Arvidsson and those guys, you know. But I mean, and if it can be a guy who is playing and is playing well enough to warrant being in the lineup, yeah, that's ideal, because obviously you've got to be on the ice when you do this stuff. I mean, I think Austin Watson has kind of been that guy, and he's right now not playing. So, and you know, Tenorti, that third pairing right now, kind of seems like it might be the best situation they've had all year.
I mean,
Corbs is
2-0 with two shutouts since Corbinian Holzer has come in the fold. And you could say that's coincidence. It's not.
Corbinian Holzer does not give up goals.
He does not give up goals.
Yeah, you are not scoring if
he's
on the ice.
He's done messing around. He's come in, and they're going to be the best defensive team in the league. I mean, they are the best defensive team in the league since he's come in. You can't argue that. They are.
You can't be better.
You really can't be better.
By the way,
it is what it is. The numbers are what they are, Joe.
By the way, I didn't see Jim Diamond's haiku, but I hope it had more to do with Corbs again. Yeah,
he did a specific
haiku just for Corbs because Lisa Dillman, my colleague out in California, requested one. So yeah, Corbinian Holzer is on his way to legend, cult hero status already.
Oh, there's a mention of Holzer in the haiku.
Very good.
Why was Holzer ever scratched? He's in there. That's a good point. It's hard to argue that right now.
That's right.
In all seriousness, I do think you're starting to see what I was talking about when Ryan Ellis first came back in the lineup. When he's back in there, that puts the defense pairings more in line to where they should be. I mean, Ekholm is back playing on the left now. Fabro back with him. You've got Tenorti, Holzer. You've got that left-right dynamic that they've liked to have had all year long now. I just think it's put things back to where they need to be. And look, let's be honest here. Like, some of this is on the Dallas Stars. I mean, they've struggled to score all year long. Offensively right now, they're having a really tough go of things in terms of their ability to finish and get to where they need to get to on the ice. But that doesn't take away, I think, from what the Predators were able to do to them over the course of the past couple games. And I think that's got to be your identity right now. I mean, we've talked about your forward struggling offensively, you know, with consistency and putting the puck in the net. I think you have to make sure, if you're the Predators, that you try to be as sound defensively as you possibly can be. Try to make life easy on your goaltender and then score when you get those opportune chances. I mean, I don't think the Predators are going to go out there and score 5 goals a game now. Like, I don't think that's going to happen based off what we've seen over the course of the past month and a half, 2 months since John Hines has taken over. But what they have gotten a lot better at is their defensive numbers and their goaltending. And I think now moving forward, that has to be their identity.
Yeah, and it probably should have been all along. And
probably.
It's been a long, winding road to get to that, but it's kind of obvious when they play that simple, solid, you know. Again, you don't want to play defense a lot. You play defense a lot, and, you know, you're in trouble. But like you said, we've seen in some games where they've really lost the possession battle. Yeah. And that was not the case in these last two games. You know, it was really two really good competitive hockey games, and that's what they've got. A bunch of 2-1, 3-2 kind of games moving forward would suit them well.
When we come back, it's the home stretch for the Nashville Predators. You take a look at their schedule, and there's a whole lot of games against a lot of quality competition fighting for playoff spot. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we got a text in on the text line, says that Holzer's nickname is Corby. So that's much better than Holzy.
That's official?
That's what it says.
Have you heard that?
I have heard that. Okay. I have heard them call Corby. Him Corby. Now, I've also heard Corbs. Well, and Holzy as well. I think Corby is the one to settle on.
I mean, it probably is honestly good to avoid Corbs. I mean, really, like, that's what people call Tim Corbin. I am glad anytime again that you use the first name. I think that's a good idea in hockey to try to, because, yeah, Holzy,
just not it.
Not that Corby's great. Don't get me wrong. The more I think about it, I really want to push for, I don't know how much, you know, Yannick Weber is playing, but Yanni would be really awesome.
Wasn't there like a meme going on about that? Like, if you hear, you know, that thing where the dress went around and it was either like you see a gold dress or a blue, whatever the colors were. I don't even remember what they were. But then when they're like a Yanni or something else going around and that were one of those things too. I don't know.
You asking me?
Yeah, like I mean, you got to keep up with these things.
Come on, Munson.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Come on. I remember the yellow, you know, blue dress.
Yeah, whatever that was.
Yeah, I remember that.
There was another one that was, you could hear something, and there was two different things, and like half the country heard one thing, half the country heard another thing.
Okay,
I'm pretty
sorry.
Sure that yes. Yanni was in there.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, but I don't remember what the other word was.
I don't either. I remember, and I don't remember.
Zalora?
I don't remember which.
It was.
Yes.
There we go.
There you go.
There we go.
So weird. Which one did you guys hear? I don't remember what I heard.
I have no idea.
I think I heard
Laurel.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay.
I think I heard Laurel.
I'm a Yanni guy.
There you go.
I say, you know.
Wow.
Good stuff.
Who knew that would ever come back up in conversation?
When was
Here
it?
We are.
Was that like a year ago?
Oh, it was more than that, I think. Who knows? 2-3 years ago? I can't keep up with the latest social media trends anymore.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't had another one of those.
I know. I'm sure we will at some point.
Let's hope.
Yes, we'll hold our breaths. Joe, they've got a lot of games coming up against teams that are right there in the standings with them, and, you know, even the Eastern Conference this week, Toronto and Columbus still fighting for a playoff spot. Montreal, I mean, they're basically going to have to win almost every game to really claw their way back into this race. But you've got another game against another two games against Colorado, another game against Winnipeg, Chicago. You mentioned at Minnesota next Sunday. Like, they've got a ton of games coming up against quality competition. And this is something where the Predators typically have responded well to that. Now, they did lose to Minnesota and Edmonton last week, but they've played well against Calgary, played well against St. Louis, Dallas, back-to-back wins. This is going to be an interesting test for them to figure out what they're made of because, you know, this week, four games on the road, you mentioned how well they've played on the road as of late. There's never a more important time than now than to continue that trend. And the way UC Soros is playing right now, especially when it comes to Montreal Tuesday, then Thursday against Toronto, and Saturday and Sunday is when the back-to-back situation creeps up. I would imagine that Soros is probably going to get three of the next four,
yep,
would be my guess. Just, I mean, I think you have to
at this point. I don't think there's any question about that. It'll be interesting once they get to the weekend, you know, which one they choose for Pecorine at Columbus or at Minnesota. But I don't even think there's a decision to make if you're not right now in a back-to-back in terms of going to Sarge. You go there until he tells you not to with his play. And right now he's telling you to play him every game.
Yeah, he is. And that's coming at the perfect time for the Predators because, let's be honest, most of this year, goaltending has been a part of the problem. And so far the last month or so, I mean, Soros in particular, he's just taking the ball and run with it. Look, there were starting to be questions among the fan base of, you know, back in November, December of this season, like, is this guy really the long-term solution here? Because the numbers weren't great, and the performances were very up and down. And I think this last month and a half or so, I think has really calmed a lot of nerves around here. Not only in the short term of this year, but the long term as well. I think people are like, okay, this is what we thought we were going to see from UC Soros this year, and kind of that progression of his career, getting more responsibility, more starts, and hopefully seeing his production go up with that. Didn't see that start this year. Now it's starting to come around a little bit.
Yeah, no question. I feel like he's a slow starter.
Yeah, he has been.
Now, the thing about that is he's also never started a season as the guy, which is probably what he's going to start next season as. So maybe that's different too. It can't be. I mean, it's like Pecorine right now is adjusting to this play once every four games kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that can't be easy. It can't be as easy as knowing, you know, this, getting that rhythm of kind of knowing you're going to start most games. So maybe that's part of it too. But no question, the thing is, everybody knew Pecorine, you know, was going to decline at some point. Everyone knew that was going to come, and it's not a shock it would come this year. But obviously, in tandem with that, you hoped Soros would also rise and take the spot. And when they both were struggling, it didn't look good. So this is both a short and long-term big development for the team to see him play like this. And again, let's see if he can keep going here. But this is a pretty good stretch when you talk about those 14 games.
It is. And Ryan Ellis with another goal on Saturday. His production since he's come back. Look, defensively, it is what it is. We've known that was going to be there. But offensively, since he's come back, I mean, he continues to put up points. His first week back, he was the second star of the entire NHL. You know, last year, I'll be honest with you, Joe, after that playoff series against Dallas, I was looking around. I think you and I may have even talked about this, and we were saying, you know what? I'm not sure about that Ryan Ellis contract. I think it kicked in, and you were just sitting there wondering, like, oh, is this what they're going to get the rest of the year? Because just optically, especially in that first round of the playoffs last year, didn't look great for Ryan Ellis. And I think we've learned since then, health was probably a big factor in that. This year, when he's been healthy, I mean, he has been otherworldly good. Right there alongside, and probably not quite as good as Roman Josi, but there hasn't been much of a drop-off. Those two as a pairing, they just continue to carry this team forward with them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, different kinds of players. I mean, again, Josi does stuff dynamic every night that you're like, huh? You know, and Ellis isn't that guy, but no, he's been really good. And yes, you sign that deal. And again, I never ever bought for a second this sign the deal and, oh, now you're slacking off. But he didn't look right last year. And I think it was more than one injury. And again, I go back. I think he said something about, you know, we'll let you know. We asked him about surgery and stuff like that after the season. He's sort of coy about it.
But yeah.
Whatever the case, now he's healthy and you see how important he is. And you can, every time the Preds go one way or the other, you know, there's probably an instinct to either go doom and gloom when they're not doing well, or if you want to be a little bit of a sunshine optimist, you can look right now and say, gee, Ryan Ellis wasn't on the ice for a lot of these struggles after the Winter Classic when Corey Perry knocked him out for a while, and now he's back, and you know, things look a little bit better. So that's one reason to be optimistic right now, the fact that they just look like a better team with him in the lineup, and maybe they'd be in a much better situation right now had that never happened.
They could be. Now, I will say, I mean, the up and down nature of this team, it was still there when Ryan Ellis was in the lineup before the injury.
Yes. Quite frankly, you're taking the realist view now. Yes.
Yeah, look, I mean, this team right now, and Joe, I think you would agree with this. After what I've seen based on like 68 games worth of sample size, you just kind of have to know that there's probably going to come another point this regular season where they lose two or three in a row and people freak out around here. And there will probably come another point after that where they win two or three in a row and put themselves right back in it. I think at this point, just watching this team play, watching what's going on around them in the standings, if this doesn't come down to that last week in terms of them getting in the playoffs or not, I mean, I'll be floored at this point because I think that's the track that we're on. I think it's going to be that close. And that last game, which is April 4th, here at home against the Minnesota Wild, I mean, that could be a play-in game for the playoffs. I mean, that's essentially where they are at this point. So I think everybody would agree that the likeliest scenario here is this Predators team, it's going to come down right until the very end in terms of whether or not they make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe something's clinched one way or the other on the second at Philly, you know. But
that last week.
The last week, I'll be shocked if, like, we know for sure this team's postseason fate as we approach April Fool's Day against Montreal, by the way, which is interesting. And again, now, is Shea Weber, by the way, is he still
there.
He's still on track. Still on track, yes. For, again, that's the 1,000th game.
Would be his 1,000th regular season game on April 1st in Nashville. It's kind of funny the way things work out sometimes.
What a night that could be. The Preds could be going for, you know, to clinch the playoffs. Who knows? Or to be eliminated from the playoffs. I'm open to either possibility.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes this time of the year so much fun is because you're in the race right until the very end and things, I mean, you heard Ryan Ellis talk about it in a clip we played earlier in the show. I mean, even the players, they're going home. They're watching the games. They're rooting for other teams that they need to win to win. They're rooting for teams they need to lose to lose. And that's what makes this time of the year so fun. Being in a playoff race like this can also make it very stressful if you're a fan as well. So that's going to be interesting to keep up with in just terms of, you know, when you have some of these big games, especially against Minnesota, against Winnipeg, against Arizona, you just got to win those. Like that's basically what this season, I think, is going to boil down to. I think it's going to be really, really close down the rest of the stretch. Can you get big wins against Minnesota, against Arizona, against Winnipeg, those teams that you're fighting with, they're in the standings right around you.
And then this week, you've got Montreal's on the fringe, which actually I almost think is more dangerous to play teams that are like that. Yeah. I mean, Toronto and Columbus. Columbus playing really well right now.
Yeah, they are.
You know, Toronto, those are two really good teams in the East that are going to be in the playoffs. And, you know, I almost feel like it's better for the Preds to play teams like that that are also fighting for positioning versus just trying to spoil someone's night. But then you get through those three, and Minnesota, couple big games with that team that really could end up swinging this thing.
Kevin Fiala, he's got to cool off at some point, right? Fiala,
I don't know,
like,
man.
You would think. Like, this has never happened.
You would think.
What's going on?
But he's also one of those guys, young player still. He's a young guy. We always knew he had tons of talent. Sometimes guys figure out consistency.
Yeah.
My guess would be he's going to continue to be a streaky player like Philip Forsberg is.
Yeah.
But, boy, he looks pretty good right now.
He sure does. When we come back, if you're Derrick Henry, how do you approach this free agency decision? Do you sign a big contract and be the bell cow running back for a team? Or are you willing to maybe take a look at extending your career a little bit and signing with a team that has multiple running backs? Just an interesting decision in the dynamic of today's modern NFL running back and the life of their career. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Joe, the Titans are very quickly becoming America's team. They're all over the place.
You can't get them off ESPN.
Can't get them off ESPN.
This is like 10 straight minutes on SportsCenter. They're talking Titans.
They're talking about the Titans. It's not even just Brady. They're talking about Derrick Henry and John Robinson, all these different people. Who knew? Titans are so popular around the country.
There you go. They're showing last instance in Titans Oilers history. Last MVP. These are good trivia questions. McNair. In the last 4,000 passing yards, 30 passing TD seasons.
Warren Moon, baby.
I was gonna see if Munson knew that.
Well, it's Warren Moon.
You knew that?
You knew that.
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay, good job.
But that was in 91 and 90.
It's also on my TV, by the way. I got a TV.
You got one in there, too?
Just not as big as the one in your studio, but yeah, I still got a TV.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure what channel you had it on.
That was in 91 when he had the 4,000 yards. I wasn't even alive.
Wow.
I was born in 92.
I don't even want to.
I was a little toddler. I was a little baby. I was a 1 year old little baby.
What were you doing in 91,
freshman,
Joe?
Freshman in college.
Oh yeah,
listening to A Tribe Called Quest in his dorm room somewhere.
Nirvana. Yep.
Yeah, see, pretty there much. Go. I just guessed it.
Pretty much.
What a year it was.
I loved Warren Moon too. I loved those Oilers teams with Warren Moon, and also they were great on Super Tecmo Bowl. With Ernest Givens and Haywood Jeffries. Lorenzo White running the ball. Yeah, man. Good stuff.
So for all those people who have been mad about the constant Tom Brady conversation, look.
Yeah.
Just 10 minutes on the Titans on SportsCenter. They're all over the place nationally.
Jack Conklin clips up there. They had Logan Ryan clips. I mean, you know, they're talking the whole deal.
They are. It's part of that deal is Derrick Henry, which they did just mention on SportsCenter as well. And we just assumed, and I think, you know, the 98% likelihood is he is going to re-sign with the Titans, and it's going to be for a lot of money. How long it is, I'm not sure. Maybe 3 years, 4 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. But he's going to be, if he signs here, you would assume, the bell cow for the Titans. He's going to get a lot of carries. There's going to be a lot of wear and tear on his body. How much, if you're Derrick Henry, not even specifically just Derrick Henry, but running backs in general now in the NFL, that maybe you take a look at going to a place where they've got a pretty good, healthy stable of running backs. Maybe you're not getting 25, 30 carries per game, and you're preserving yourself for a longer period of playing time because, you know, that position, shelf life is not long in the NFL. I mean, that's something if you're trying to extend your career, maybe you take a look at if you're a running back. Obviously, the money is going to be the most important thing at the end of the day, and you want to get as much of that as you can possibly get. But that position has been devalued in terms of the money teams are willing to spend on it. Certainly the length of contracts that teams are willing to go on it. I do wonder at what point, if you're running backs around the NFL, do you start to take a look at maybe the way you approach your position and your long-term survivability in this league?
Well, I think you think about that stuff, but you know, you're still trying to maximize value, right? Of course.
Right.
So, I mean, like, I guess my question on that specific to Derrick Henry is, like, where would that be? And, I mean, right now is, like, if you're Derrick Henry, there is no time in your life that you'll be more marketable than right now.
Nope.
So, I guess I'd kind of be surprised if that's even in his mind. Honestly.
And he's got to be a guy that, like, he wants that. Like, he wants to be the bell cow.
Well, exactly. I mean, look, I honestly can't think of, like you said, in the NFL now, there are a lot more situations of legitimate, real, like, two-back, you know, systems where there's a lot of splitting of the workload, and that's great. But I can't recall a running back asked about you know, workload, who didn't say, yeah, gotta get your carries, you gotta get into a rhythm, and Derrick Henry certainly has said that and has demonstrated that. Another thing with Derrick Henry to keep in mind is that, you know, his first year he got 110 carries.
Yeah.
You know, because DeMarco Murray was the best back in the NFL for a lot of that year before he got hurt. He got 176 carries in 2017. So he had 2 years in the NFL with sub 200 carries. Then you go up to 215, and again, half of his third year, he was basically the two, or kind of a 1A, 1B, and Deion Lewis for a while was clearly the one, and then Derrick Henry takes over late, and then last year you get to 303, baby. Yep. You know, but I mean, and also, by the way, 303 and his best yards per attempt, 5.1 yards per attempt, you know, yards after contact, all that stuff, ridiculous. I just think you can say, if you're Derrick Henry, you can think, look, I had a couple years where I did not take a lot of tread off after he ran a lot at Alabama. Right now is the time to go get paid. And whatever situation you're in, I do think the Titans are going to draft probably to try to bring someone in who can really complement him and can take some of the work. I think that's certainly the idea.
Yeah.
You know, Deion Lewis basically faded into obvious passing down guy, and that was that. And that's just how it should have been. And maybe it's not realistic to think someone is going to come in here and really be able to take a lot off his shoulders. But I think if you're Derrick Henry, you want to be here and you want to be paid for it.
Got a text from the text line. Ron from Fort Wayne, Indiana says, I think Derrick Henry will have a long career because of his running style. He just doesn't take big hits. I mean, it's pretty hard to hit that guy hard. I mean, he's usually the one delivering the blows rather than the defensive players. Maybe that does work to his advantage that, you know, he's so big and he's so hard to tackle. It's pretty hard to square him up and hit him really hard. You see it every now and then, and on occasion he'll take a big hit. But usually he's the guy initiating the contact, falling forward. And I do wonder if maybe that – I mean, he's been durable. There's no question about that. You take a look at his durability. I know he missed the game last year against the Saints, but I still believe, you know, if that was a really meaningful game in terms of the overall playoff picture – or maybe a playoff game, he's playing in that game. Durability has not been a question for him so far, and I do wonder just the simple science of how big he is, how much that plays into it.
Yeah, probably some when you're 6'3", 247. Now, the thing is, too, though, like he is kind of upright, and I know sometimes you worry about guys like that, but no, now that you mention it, I hadn't really thought of it in terms of him taking big hits, but I'm trying to think of one. Of course he's taking – I mean, you get into the mix sometimes and, you know, you're taking shots. But, yeah, he does have a knack for avoiding it. Now, earlier in his career, the criticism was, yeah, he's avoiding it because he keeps trying to pop everything outside.
Yeah.
And but having embraced, you know, running, you know, putting his head in there and keeping the legs moving and just getting 5 yards when 2 yards are there – that's a physical way to run, but yeah, he seems to be the guy who delivers the punishment more than the other way around. So, and then the durability thing, as you mentioned, I mean, it's a hammy, and he misses 1 week, and then he's right back out there, and he's great at Houston.
Turned out to be a great decision by Mike Vrabel.
It did.
It really did.
And that's really, I mean, he had something in camp, you know, some minor thing, and they were just being careful with him, but that's, I think, if you're on Henry's side of the table here, that's a big thing I'm pointing out. I mean, this guy has not been hurt at all. So you can talk about short shelf life for running backs, and that's fine, and that's true for a lot of guys. But this guy has answered the bell for 4 seasons whenever asked. And, I mean, so you got to just look at a situation on its own sometimes, and you can't just – the whole position does not necessarily apply to him.
It doesn't. Now, if I'm the Titans, you hear that and you say, yeah, that's great. You've been durable. You also don't really play on third down unless it's like 3rd and 2. And that's certainly going to be something if I'm John Robinson, I'm probably using that in the negotiations as well. Because if you're trying to get, you know, Zeke Elliott money, I mean, Zeke plays all 3 downs. He's catching balls out of the backfield. He's a nice receiving threat for Dak Prescott. And while there were a couple times this year where Derrick Henry, you know, caught screen passes out of the backfield and took him to the house, I think of that Cleveland game, like, it's happened. But he's not necessarily a guy that you think of in that mold in terms of your every down back.
Yeah, I don't know that he'll ever be, you know, a great little choice route runner out right. of the backfield. And I think his hands are fine. I'm trying to think. So John Glennon, my cohort at The Athletic, our Titans beat writer, had a story earlier this season about Derrick Henry's high school career. And I'm paraphrasing the coach, basically said his hands were so bad he was like Edward Scissorhands in high school. You know? So now from that to this, he's come a long way because I think he's fine. I mean, he can go out there.
Yeah,
he can catch it. I still say they should use him more on third down. It's all, you know, pass pro is something he's gotten better at, maybe not great at still. If I were the Titans, I would want him out there just as a threat because if you do give him the ball at any point in the field, that's a problem for the defense. And I think he's also a guy that they have to pay attention to him. But, yes, to your point, definitely. On the negotiating side of the table, that is – To me, the primary knock on him.
When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. That's coming up next. But first, the NCAA tournament is right around the corner, and it's time for you to sign up and play the official Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by Central Barbecue and Sudden Service Convenience Stores. Go to thegamenashville.com or the Game Nashville mobile app now and sign up to play. Brackets will open after the teams have been selected on Sunday, March the 15th. Also, if you're lucky enough to have the perfect bracket, you could win $1 million. So good luck to everyone in the bracket competition coming up. You're listening to Morning Drive right here live from the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.